come up on the tight.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. And we have an exciting show, don't we, Tim?
Yes, we do, actually.
Not only do we have one of the most prestigious authors and publishers who lives in El Paso, Maria Maloney. And we're going to talk about her new book, The Lost Letters of Mileva. But on Poetic License, we have Diana Sevilla, and she is going to sing a poem. Diana, who are you going to sing? What poem are you going to sing?
Yes, I'm going to sing a poem by Cesar Vallejo. It's called Eses, and which translates to drink.
Cesar Vallejo, that's awesome. That's great. I think I saw his grave in Paris.
Oh, did you?
He's buried in Paris.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep,
wow,
he
is.
Yeah,
nice.
Awesome. He's the most depressing poet in the world.
That's right. That's why we love him.
But what's really interesting, what's cool about this show is Tim and I have Maria in the studio. We have Diana in the studio. And then we also have a guest.
Yes.
She's not going to be on the radio. Her name is Antoneta Oliver, and she is all the way from Barcelona, Spain. She teaches at the Universitat de Barcelona.
Nice.
Is that how you say it? It's in Catalan. How do you say it?
Universitat Pompeu Fabra, Barcelona.
She teaches classes in so many languages. She speaks Catalan, she speaks Spanish, but the reason why she's here in El Paso is she is a scholar of Chicano literature.
Ah, that's fantastic.
Isn't that awesome?
Wow, that's great, man. So, that's fantastic. We're honored. We're honored to have you here.
Yeah, yes. And so she's just in El Paso studying Chicano literature and studying Chicano writers. We thought we'd have her in the studio just so she can observe.
I thought she came all the way from Spain just for Words on a Wire to be in the studio.
Well, that really is the reason, because we have quite a reputation there.
She's a big fan, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, nice.
So we're very excited. And also, we're so excited to have Maria Maloney. She does live in El Paso. She is very well known here in our city. She is the publisher and the founder of Mouthfeel Press, which, as you know, is doing some great books. She publishes Shanath Carranza, Gabe Gomez, a lot of great writers. So we're really happy to have you here. So, Maria, welcome to Words on a Wire. Your latest book is called The Lost Letters of Mileva. Tell us who she is and how this book came about.
It came about 6 years ago, actually. I was taking a class in art and physics. We were studying art and Einstein and all the metaphors related to science.
Was this my class or was
that was your class?
Were you in that class?
Yes, wow. I was in two classes actually with you. And so this was part of the project at the time. And then, of course, it was during the time my husband was deployed to Iraq. So we were emailing each other every other day and we were, you know, corresponding via snail mail. And then, of course, I came to see the PBS documentary on Mileva. So it all kind of came together. Now, Mileva is the first wife of Albert Einstein, and they had three children, a girl and two boys. We don't know what happened to the girl. She might have been adopted. She might have died. I don't know what happened. And she was actually a physicist, and she was born in 1875 in Serbia.
So Einstein married a physicist?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes, he did. And they met each other in Zurich while she was at the Polytechnic Institute.
Okay. And so basically it's a book of poems. Would you call it a book of poems or would you call it correspondence? How would you describe the book?
I would think that some of it is poems, the first half at least. And then the second part is more of prose poems. And the third part is definitely poetry, but it's more experimental. So that's how I would describe it. And I kind of wanted to make it into some sort of narrative. So each segment has there's a wife for each segment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that sense that there's sort of multiple women's voices inside mm-hmm. of this. You know, one of the things, because I love research so much, one of the things I'm curious is how much of that sort of correspondence between Mileva and Albert, you know, did you incorporate into this?
I actually did. I incorporated some of the letters that they corresponded with. And, for example, they used to call each other Dolly and Johnny, and it's in there. Einstein would say things like, little, my little heart, my little boots, my little, you know, to Mileva. Mm-hmm. So I incorporated all those things in there.
And that's interesting because you have this sort of parallel, right, between you and your husband's sort of, you know, correspondence and then their course. What did you find in their correspondence maybe that you could relate to or identify with, and how did that sort of, you know, influence what you were writing?
Well, I think the first part where they're writing the love letters to each other, and that really kind of paralleled to my husband at the time. time that he was in Iraq, because it's like falling in love all over again when somebody's away.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, I know what that's like.
It's like falling in love, yes. Right. And so, you sort of go back to that first time that when you met. So that was, for me, the main parallel. So it was like reliving that romance again with my husband. And that kind of helped to set up the whole context of the first part of this chapbook.
Yeah, I think it's easy to fall in love through correspondence because you're only right when you're in the mood.
Right.
You know, oh, and wow. You only have to, you know, you write when you want to write and you only read it when you want to read it. And so it's, you're always in the mood. You're always ready for romance.
And you always remember, the very best of times when you're away from each other, you know.
Right.
Versus being together all the time.
Right, right. It's not you write when you're irritated. Bet if you were here, you would have left the toothbrush.
Right. You weed out the mundane sort of things that don't matter, right?
Maria Maloney, we're talking about her book, The Lost Letters of Mileva. Albert Einstein is just as infamous as being a horrible husband as he is for being a genius, a physicist, a great physicist. And I notice there's a lot of pain in Mileva's voice and Mileva's letters. Can you tell us a little bit about that, how that played into the book?
Right. Well, after seeing the documentary and doing some research, I realized that Einstein was not a very good husband, like you said. He had a lot of, at the very end of their relationship, there was a lot of control issues. There were certain things that she couldn't do. Or he would dictate to her, you can't do these things, you know, you have to stay quiet, you have to do this, you have to do that. So I try to incorporate what she might have felt during that time. Mm-hmm. There's also one of her best friends, her name was Helene, but in this particular case, I named that best friend Lola because she's one of my friends. And so she had to correspond to somebody, you know, and so for me, that was the main context for that part of the book. And then, of course, later on, he asked for a divorce and went on to marry his first cousin, leaving her with her two boys, one of which was schizophrenic. So she had to deal with all that pain. And, of course, the other thing was that once she married Einstein, she decided to devote herself to the children. And so she gave up her career as a physicist, which I think is So many women have done that.
Absolutely.
You know? And then, of course, there was the, when she was in Bern, she tried to earn a diploma at one of the universities there, and she couldn't earn the diploma because she was a female. So I felt very connected to her in so many ways. You know, issues that are still relevant to our times.
You quote at the beginning of the book, you quote something from Song of Songs, you know, which is a very popular love poem, I guess you could say, from the Old Testament.
Yes.
And I notice in the poems themselves, especially the first part, there's a lot of language that might have come from or been influenced by the dialogue between the lover and the beloved in Song of Songs. Mm-hmm. How much did that play into the book in itself?
Well, it really did. I was at a very, let me go back. The middle part of the book was written during the time about 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. The first half of the book was written at different periods in my time. And it was interesting because I put the finishing touches last December on this book, and it was during a very critical time in my life. I was very ill. I was bedridden, so I needed a lot of spiritual support.
Right.
And I started to read Teresa de Avila. I started,
who you quote as well.
Yes. Right. I started to read the Bible. And, I mean, for me, it was essential that I get that spiritual support in order for me to lift from whatever darkness I was going through. And so those were the last finishing touches from those books. And I guess in a way, the language influenced me when I went on ahead and revised the poems.
And I imagine that whether consciously or not, you were either influenced by and or connected to Lee Young Lee, whose great poem, The City in Which I Love You, I think also seems to have, there seems to be some sort of connection between that poem and this as well.
Yes, actually, I read him too. Yeah. I read him too. Anything that I could get my hands on that would kind of feel that spiritual need, that sort of sense of fulfillment. Because when you're in a situation where you're ill, there's a lot of darkness, there's a lot of emptiness, you know, and there's a lot of hopelessness and helplessness.
Right.
So you look for books, you look for something to enrich that part of, to fulfill that that need.
Right, and that was essentially that poem by Lee Young Lee, The City in Which I Love You, which also the title poem of that fantastic collection of poems of his is basically a rewriting of Song of Songs.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I did not know that. I did not know that. That's very
What's interesting, too, is just how you create that narrative that you're talking about in such sparse language. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, as somebody who likes to cross genres also, it's like for me, if I'm trying to write a narrative in a poem, it becomes dense and, you know, but you just do it so wonderfully in such, you know, in sort of economy of words. So that's fantastic. One of the things I'm curious about is whenever, you know, you're writing from real life people or sort of factual documents, right, then there's a point where you have to sort of take liberties, right? And I'm wondering, how did you feel about, you know, what was your process for that, taking liberties with some of, you know, Mileva and Albert's story, sort of in incorporating your own?
Well, I did have to take liberties. I mean, I went on ahead and incorporated some of the information that the correspondence, actually. And so I did incorporate that. I thought to myself that was quite a liberty, you know, to take. Also, as far as the language itself, I felt that I didn't feel this need to have one set of form, or at least the forms. And I went on ahead and did, as you can see, my forms are different in each segment of the book.
Yeah.
And I felt that pretty much made me feel very comfortable, and I felt like that was one of the liberties that I took. I didn't feel tied down to one set.
Right.
Yes.
I often like to, when we have poets on the show, read one of the lines that I find very moving and very beautiful, and I'm going to read one here.
Okay.
I spread my age like autumn under trees. That's a fantastic line. It's a strong image, but also there's kind of a weighted sadness to it.
Yeah.
Was it difficult when you got into that headspace of her towards the end of the book where it seems to get a little bit sadder, I guess, more leading to disastrous things that would happen?
Well, you know, again, it was a little difficult, but at the same time, I was also going to a very dark period in my life. So in that sense, it was a lot. It wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be. It was very therapeutic. I don't know that if I would have been going through that dark period, I would have been able to write the last segment or to write some of the poems.
Right.
Because I think so much of us, we're the subtext in poetry.
Right.
You know, there's so much of us in there through, you know, in between the lines.
Right.
And as much as we want to say, well, we are, you know, this is not part of us, or this is that happens during revision, I believe, when we can separate ourselves from the poem. But during the time that we are writing the poem, we are in there. And for me, poetry has been that sort of maze discovery where there's an entry point and then there's that exit. When I write, I'm in the poem. Whether it's the me, I'm always in there, in that space. Yeah.
Borges says that Shakespeare hid himself in the subtextual corners of his work.
Oh.
Right? And then those were plays. But with poetry, it's a lot more personal. We had Tim and I had Natalie Diaz on the show a while back, and she just says, you know, I write about the things that worry me, you know, which I thought was really a wonderful quote, because her poems, you know, like yours, are very, they're painful at times, but beauty in that pain.
Beauty in that pain. And it's true. You always find something beautiful in everything. I think that's a poet's mind.
Right.
You know, that there's always beauty in the darkest moments. And you sort of have to find it, even if it is sometimes difficult.
Right.
And you don't want to disclose so much of that information, or you don't feel like, well, you ask yourself, who's going to care about this? But, you know, it's amazing what language does.
Right.
You know, you mentioned before our talk, there's so many good writers coming from El Paso that come out of El Paso. And I think one of my first impressions of El Paso, years before I moved here, I came here because I was working on a book on the border and I wanted to study border cities. But one of my first impressions, it was a very windy day and there was dust everywhere. And I thought, oh, my God, this place is ugly. But then, you know, as my week went on and I saw the sunsets, and sometimes you'll be driving down a street or, you know, in El Paso, mm-hmm. and suddenly the horizon changes,
right.
you know, just yeah. sinks into this other view. And then you mm-hmm. see the lights of Juarez, and there is a lot of beauty there. But it's almost like you have to see the beauty, because
right.
I think a lot of people can drive through El Paso and say, what a crap hole.
Right. You know,
right.
But they're just not seeing it.
Right.
That's right, yeah. Right. And so, one of the ways I described El Paso early on when I first came out to El Paso, I called Diana, my wife, at home, and I said, she said, is it beautiful? What does it look like? And I said, it's beautiful. It's a different kind of beauty. She said, what kind? I said, it's the face without makeup, you know? And that's the way I kind of think of it.
That's
it's
wonderful.
A sort of natural, sort of just stripped down beauty, you know?
Yeah.
And El Paso was like that for me.
Yeah, when I first came here, as you know, you were my student. Mm-hmm. I used to have my office, you know, in this building.
Yes.
That looked out over Juarez. You would just see Juarez out my window, right out my
mm-hmm.
window. And it's the poor part of Juarez. I'm mm-hmm. talking dirt streets. I'm talking rattling buses going down the hills, mm-hmm. kicking up dust. And
right.
I'm talking about the hills where many of the women were uncovered, the murdered women were discovered. It's just not a very beautiful place. But when the sun started to go down, and it just changed the colors. And then the pastel little shacks would just brighten up. It just became, the way I described it at the time, is ugly beautiful.
And I think that's very, relevant to us as far as, you know, we have such beautiful and ugly moments, but we have to find those moments.
Yeah.
And at this point in my life, I feel like most things are beautiful as far as even the ugliness also, you know. And that kind of motivates me to continue writing. To continue writing and finding that beauty, even in language. So, through language, actually.
It's like Benjamin Alida Sainz, our good friend and frequent co-host of Words on a Wire, says about his own work, if it doesn't hurt, it's not worth much.
Right.
Wow, yeah. Yeah.
You are publisher of Mouthfeel Press. How's that going?
That's going wonderful, actually. We've had some books come out this year already. Larry D. Thomas, who's the past Poet Laureate of Texas. We had Peggy Antard come out also with our new Firestarters. And we have more books lined up for the first half of the year. So we're very excited about that. Wonderful poets.
Yeah.
And they really motivate me to, you know, to write also. Whenever I finish a manuscript, I always have this urge to go in my desk and just sit down and write and write.
When you finish a manuscript, that's your urge, is to go back
and
write? Yes, yes. Oh, yeah, because you get to read all the manuscripts.
Yes, I get to read all the manuscripts.
Right. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, well, that's a good way of saying it, get to, because she says, I have to read all the manuscripts.
Yeah, right.
No, when I get to.
Get to, yeah.
We're talking to Maria Maloney, the author of The Lost Letters of Mileva. It's correspondence between Einstein and his wife and other voices, and it's just a very moving, very touching collection of poems. You didn't publish this.
No, I did not. And I will not publish my own work.
That's
no,
good.
This book was published by Pandora Lobo out of Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, that's where they're from. Okay.
Yeah.
And one of the things that both Tim and I know is that when you come out with a book, unless you're Stephen King, you can come out with a book and then go to Paris and live for a year and not worry about it. But if you're not Stephen King, you have to push that book. You have to get out there and do readings. You have to have a blog. You have to get on Facebook. And you know, in fact, I think that what happens is when a book comes out, then the work starts.
Right.
How are you getting this book out there?
I actually have been reading. I had a reading, two readings in Austin.
But how do you set them up?
I was invited to read. So that's a good thing. I'm going to be having a reading in January at the Rubens Center and with Barbed Wire Series, and another one at El Paso Community College. I've been very fortunate that I have been invited.
Right, and you will get invited, but that's not going to be enough. So what else are you going to do?
Well, I am going to have to, you know, pick up that phone and start calling people and saying, you know, if you need a reader. I mean, this is very different from being an editor and a publisher.
I bet.
Right.
This is completely a new field for me. Now I know how authors feel. And I, you know, it's taken me a while to see myself as an author now. And I think that was one of the things that had stopped me previously from publishing the work or sending out for publication, because I knew that there was going to be work to be done.
Right.
So this is a different field area. Yeah. So I really admire authors.
Well, you know, if I could say, I think, Tim, you're pretty good at getting your book out there. I mean, you know, your books do very well.
Yeah, I think I'm done with that, though. I'm so tired. It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. But the cool thing is the more books you have, right, the easier it gets because, yeah, you know, the more people know about you. But the first time, oh.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, it's getting a little easier, but still.
Well, you know, your last book, his last book, Manana Means Heaven, did very, very well.
Uh-huh.
And
yep,
continues to do well. So I imagine your next book will be a little easier.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, my next book's a book of poems.
Oh, wow.
So I
congratulations.
Think it's be really hard.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Well, but you already have a name out there. Everybody knows, yeah, who Daniel Chacón is.
Yeah, but then they turn the other way when they see me coming. Anyway, Maria, we're going to ask you to read a poem for, okay, our poem of the,
yes,
week. So go ahead and read something from your wonderful book, The Lost Letters of Mileva.
And I'm just going to read the first poem in the book.
Okay.
I wade through winter buried under Zurich snow, warm in gloves of memory. White snow betrays the melancholy of my days. In spring, when I return to you, it will be with my deformed love, venturing into your universe. Your back bent over a book, and trains in their passing will remind you I will be grazing in your fields. You lift your eyes, recall my olive skin, my lips purring against yours. Beloved, the days lead dark. Tulips grow at the edge of the rain.
Yeah, wonderful, Maria.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure having you on Words on a Wire.
Oh, well, thank you so much for inviting me. I was looking forward to this.
And on today's Poetic License, we have vocalist Diana Sevilla. She's going to be singing a poem by Cesar Vallejo, as arranged by Susana Vaca. I believe the poem is Dregs or Eses.
Esta tarde llueve como nunca y no tengo ganas de vivir, corazón. Esta tarde es dulce porque no ha de ser. Viste gracia y pena, viste de mujer. Esta tarde en Lima llueve y yo recuerdo las cavernas crueles de mi ingratitud. Mi bloque de hielo sobre su amapola, más fuerte que su, no seas así. Mis violentas flores negras y la bárbara y enorme pedrada y el trecho glacial pondrá en silencio de su dignidad con óleos quemantes el punto final. Por eso esta tarde, como nunca, voy con este búho, con este corazón. Y otras pasan, y viéndome tan triste, toman un poquito de ti. En la abrupta arruga de mi hondo dolor. Esta tarde llueve, llueve mucho, y no tengo ganas de vivir. Corazón, y no tengo ganas de vivir, corazón.
That was Diana Sevilla. Thank you. That was beautiful. I wish you could see us in the studio right now. Diana turned off the lights, and the only light we have is the light from the laptop that Tim has opens, and we're all around the table, our faces shining from that light like the potato eaters in Van Gogh's image. And that was really beautiful. And you're making sadness and pain a beautiful thing. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
To go along with the beautiful words I just heard. Thank
all
you.
Right.
Thank,
yep.
you. Thank you.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of Words on a Wire. Thank you, Maria Maloney.
Thank you, Diana Sevilla. Uh-huh.
And thank you, Antioneta Oliver, for joining us from Barcelona, all the way from Barcelona,
wow.
just to be in the studio.
Yes, our international
so she could hear
audience.
You sing
Wonderful.
And hear your poetry.
Thank you, Antioneta.
Join us every week on Words on a Wire. And don't forget, the next book you read
can save your life.
Esta tarde llueve como nunca y no tengo ganas de vivir, corazón. Esta tarde es dulce porque no ha de ser. Viste gracia y pena, viste de mujer. Esta tarde en Lima llueve y yo recuerdo las cavernas crueles, mi ingratitud, mi bloque de hielo sobre su amapola más fuerte que su. Mis violentas flores negras y la bárbara y enorme pedrada y el trecho glacial pondrá el silencio de su dignidad con óleos quemantes el punto final. Por eso esta tarde, como nunca, voy con este búho, con este corazón. Y otras pasan, y viéndome tan triste, toman un poquito de ti en la abrupta arruga de mi esta tarde llueve mucho y no tengo ganas de vivir, corazón. Y no tengo ganas de vivir, corazón.